So we are holding on Chof Amr Aleph, eight lines from the top line. We learned yesterday that the Mishnah told us that there are certain kinds of gnats you're allowed to use for sach and certain kinds that you can't. The rule, of course, is that if something is makabel truma, then you can't use it for sach. A mat that's made for lying on is makabel truma because just that, you can lie on it, therefore it's makabel trumas midras, the truma of a zov, and other people like him. Tosfos, by the way, points out, what about on the face of it? Never mind trumas midras, Tosfos points out, can't you conceivably have a problem that a mat could become an oihel, where you could spread it out and use it as the roof of a tent or something, and then it would be makabel truma that way. The answer is that no, only if a Mishnah in Shabbos tells us that if it's made out of plant material, the only one that would be makabel truma like that would be flax, linen, nothing else. So here we're talking about mats that are made out of various kinds of grasses or rushes or things like that, so they're not going to be makabel that kind of truma. Anyway, so the basic rule was then that if it's made for sleeping, then it's a makabel truma, and if not, then not. And so the Tanakhama of the Mishnah had just said that if it's a large one, then it depends whether you made it for sleeping on or for sach. He didn't specify explicitly what happens with a small one. Then Rabbi Eliezer said whether a small or a big one, if you made it for sleeping is possible, and if you made it for sach is kosher. By the way, in Halacha, it mentions that you go in this regard according to what the typical use of such mats is in such places. Here in the Mishnah, we're talking about big versus small, because in those times, big ones were typically used not for sleeping on. They're too big for a person anyhow. And small ones, the size of a person, were used for sleeping on, but there are different, it works different ways in different places. For that reason, they talk about nowadays, with the mats that they sell for sach, that there can be an issue with those here in America. Nobody sleeps on mats, but not all of them are made in America. Some of them are made in places where they do sleep on mats. And then you have to start considering whether those are the typical kind of mats, bamboo or whatever they make the mats out of these days, whether that's typically a material that they might use for mats to sleep on in such places. All right, anyway. Now we had a discussion. What exactly is the Mishnah saying? Because we had the Tanakhama had mentioned a big one. He hadn't said anything specifically about a small one. And then the question becomes, what about a small one? First the Mishnah had said that, okay, the Mishnah said that, first the Gemara said that, okay, the Mishnah mentions a big one, so the implication maybe is a small one. But the question is, what about Rabbi Eliezer? So we said that, okay, Rava would say with a big one, everybody agrees. So the question was, what if you make it stam? What if you make it without having in mind for sleeping or for schach? So we said that Rava said that if it's a big one, then fine. Everybody agrees it's meant for schach. If it's a small one, then you have a machlokes. So he explained it like this, that the Tanakhama is saying if it's big, then only if you made it for sleeping is it possible, but if you made it stam, then it's kosher, and of course if you made it for schach, then it's also kosher. And a small one is the other way around. By default, we assume it was made for sleeping on. Then Rabbi Eliezer comes and says, doesn't matter, big or small, we assume by default that it's meant for schach. So this is where we're holding, an eighth line of Chof Amr Aleph. Omalei Abaye. So Abaye says to Rabbi, Ihochi, if that's how you're explaining what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, then when he says, when he's saying whether a small one or a big one, then the expression should have been the other way around. It should have been the other way around, whether a big one or a small one. Why? Because the bigger chiddush is the smaller one. So therefore, in other words, like this, everybody agrees, we're saying, according to Rava's explanation, everybody's agreeing that a big one is by default suitable for schach. Rabbi Eliezer wants us to know that the same thing is true of a small one. So in that case, he should say, achas gdola v'achas ktana, And he should say, in other words, that would imply, that would imply that that the small one is just like the big one, just like the big one that you, Tanakhama, are saying by default is fine for schach. I'm also adding that a small one, which is the size of a person, is the same thing. Rashi also brings maybe that the girsa maybe should be the other way around. The Mishnah says achas ktana v'achas gedola, and the question is, should he say achas gedola v'achas ktana? So Rashi discusses back and forth what the possibilities are that usually we try to mention. Usually when we have a list like that, usually when we have achas this for achas that, then we often have the one that's the one that's the greater chiddush first. But Tosfos actually points out that no, it's not always the case. So Rashi says actually that the one that's more poshut is not the one that's the greater chiddush, the other way around. Rashi says the one that's more poshut is usually the one that's listed first. Tosfos says it's not always necessarily like that. However, Tosfos explains the question that since Rabbi Eliezer is coming to argue with the Chachamim, and the Chachamim didn't say in so many words what they hold about a katana, they only mentioned about a gedola, then Rabbi Eliezer should have put Rabbi Eliezer should have put the katana first to tell us that he holds that even by that even by the katana, the din would be the same thing. In any case, so that's one question. But furthermore, Abaya says on Rabbah, what are you telling me? According to your explanation, Rabbah, it comes out that everybody agrees on a big one, that by default it's meant for schach, the machlokes is only on a small one. But in fact, we find a braisa that explicitly tells us that the machlokes is on a big one, and Rabbi Eliezer l'chumra, and furthermore, that we find that Rabbi Eliezer is being machmir. Whereas according to Rava, he's being makel. The Tanakhama was saying that a small one by default is meant for sleeping. Therefore, it's makabel truma and you can't use it for schach. Rabbi Eliezer is saying that no, even a small one is by default meant for schach. But, and therefore you can use it. But, we see in a braisa the other way around. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa, machsela sakanim, a mat made out of reeds. If it's a large one, you're allowed to use it for schach. Rabbi Eliezer says, it's not so fast. Don't just say that you can use it for schach. If it's not makabel truma, you can use it. Now, of course, the Tanakhama knows perfectly well that it can't be makabel truma if you want to use it. So obviously, what is Rabbi Eliezer adding? He's saying, you Tanakhama are saying generically that a large one can be used for schach. Implying by default it can be used for schach. By default, we assume it was made for purposes of schach, even if he made it stan. Rabbi Eliezer says, not so fast. If it was made for the purpose of schach, sure. But if not, then by default, not. We have to assume maybe it was made for lay. So therefore, that comes out that Rabbi Eliezer is machmir. And it comes out that he's arguing over a big one. And everybody is agreeing on a small one, that by default it's not for schach. Ela Amar Papa. So Papa says you're right. The Katana Kula Amar Le Pligi De Stama Le Shchiva. The other way around. When it comes to a small one, everybody agrees that a small one by default is meant for lying on. Ki Pligi Begdola. The Machlokes is exactly that. Like it says in the Braisa, on a large one. Tanakama Sover Stam Begdola Le Sifuch. The Tanakama holds that just that generic large one is meant for schach. Therefore, according to him, if you made it, obviously, if you made it l'shem sikuch, then any size is fine. But if you made it, stam, then the Tanakhama is saying because it's a big one, then by default we assume it's for schach. Therefore, it's okay. Rabbi Eliezer sava stam gedola nami l'shchiva. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer holds no, a big one also by default might be used for is typically used for lying on. So what does he mean? This expression, he made it for laying on. This is what he means. Stam asiyasa nami l'shchiva ad ovid l'sikuch. By default, we assume that it was made for sleeping, unless he specifically says that he's making it for schach. So yes, it comes out that Rabbi Eliezer is machmir. He says by default you have to assume it was made for sleeping on. Therefore, it's makabel truma and you can't use it for schach. And machlokes is indeed by the big one, whereas by the small one, everybody would agree that by default it's made for sleeping on. So that's where we leave it then at the moment, is between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. A small one is definitely, but a small one is the default is to use it for sleeping on. Therefore, if it was made stam or if it was made for sleeping, then it's pasul. Only if it's made for schach as a kosher. And a large one, you have it that everybody agrees to. A large one, you have a machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. The Chachamim are saying that a large one by default is meant for schach. Rabbi Eliezer is saying even a large one is by default meant for sleeping. Okay. Let's talk more about dinim of mats. Tana Rabban. Now it can also depend. Now you consider there's a difference as far as the mat. Not only the size of it, up until now we've been dealing with the size, but you have to consider there's not just the size to look at, there's also the material that's made out of. Some are softer than others and more suitable for sleeping on. There's also how it's made. It can be made smooth or it can be made bumpy. So those have to factor in as well. So, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in Braisa, Machzelas shel shifa b'shel gemi, a mat made out of shifa or gemi, which are kinds of soft grasses. So those kind, if they're made the right size, then they're suitable for sleeping on. Gdula. Now here we have the next word over here. Gimel dalet vav lamed hey. There are two ways to read it. Rashi reads it as gdula with a shuruk, which means braided. There are other rishonim who learn that it means gdola with a cholam, which means large, like we were talking about before. So we'll get back to them soon. But first, according to Rashi, so if it's made out of soft material, but gdula, but it's braided, so therefore, the fact is, it's braided, so therefore it's bumpy or it's thick or whatever. It's not the kind of thing you would lay on. Therefore, mesach kinba, therefore you can use it for sach. Katana in mesach kinba, but if it was a small one, then you can't, because then even though it's braided, you still would lay on it. Shokanim, b'shokhelas, on the other hand, if it's made out of kanim, which are kind of harder reeds, or chelas, which is another kind of harder reeds. So those kind to begin with are harder and thicker, and therefore they make a less comfortable mat anyway. So gedula mesakinba. Sorry, in the first one, machzelas shol shifa v'shol gemi. All of them. Gedula means woven. Yeah, woven or braided. So shokanim v'shol chelas gedula mesakinba. If it's braided, if it's made with braids, so therefore it's thick and hard. Therefore, you can use it for schach because it's not the kind of thing somebody would lay on. Aruga ein mesakinba. But if it's made in a way that's woven, then it's makabel truma, and then you can't use it for schach, because why would you weave it in such a way to make it smoother? And the reason would be exactly that. You want to make it smoother so that you have a smooth surface to lie on. So what we're saying is, if it's made out of softer material, then a small one is meant to be used for lying on, no matter whether it's smooth or not, because at least the material is soft. But when it's made out of harder material, a small one is going to be used for sleeping, no matter how it's made, whether it's braided or whether it's woven. In other words, whether it's bumpy or smooth. A large one is going to be the difference. On the other hand, when it's made out of harder material, then if it's also harder material and it's braided, you're not going to sleep on it. It would make a very uncomfortable thing to sleep on. Therefore it's for schach, and only if it's woven, then not. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi oyim mishum aviv, achas zu v'achas zu mesakhin ba. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi says in the name of his father, no, either way, you're allowed to use it for schach. Whether it's woven, whether it's braided, whatever material it's made out of, you're allowed to use it for schach, because the assumption is that it was made for, that the assumption is that it was made for schach. Rabbi Doisa said the same thing. Now, according to Rashi, then, the distinction that we're making is between whether it's braided or not, which is therefore a new factor that we didn't mention before. Before, we were only talking about large versus small. Now, we're also talking about the material and also how it's woven. On the other hand, the Rif and the Rambam don't bring that whole distinction of braided versus woven, meaning bumpy versus smooth or whatever. They just mention big versus small. So therefore, the Mephoshim explain that they read the word that we were reading, Gedula, over here, they read it Gedula with a Cholam, like we were saying before, and therefore it comes out that you have that you're just distinguishing between Gedula and Ketana, same as we've been doing until now, and therefore, so the Tanakama, had made a distinction about Aruga, about whether it's woven or not. But Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Dosa are saying it doesn't matter whether it's woven or braided. And we're saying we follow them because that also fits with our Mishnah, which didn't make any such distinction either. And therefore, it's fine even if it's woven. Okay. Now let's talk about mats as they relate to the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara. And then, of course, that's going to directly bear on what we're dealing over here with mats, because anything that's makabel truma, we said you can't use it for skach. So tnan hosam, we learn in a mishnah in Adius, kol hachitzolos mitamim tmeimes. Any chitzolos, and we're going to see soon in a couple of lines, the Gemara is going to explain what two opinions what chitzolos are. So all chitzolos mitamim tmeimes. They're all able to be mekabel tumas mess. As the Gemara is going to explain soon, we're talking about over here that they're a keli, they're a kli kibul, they're able to hold something inside them. Therefore, the Tanakama of that Mishnah is saying that they're only mekabel tumas mess. Meaning, and that includes various other kinds of tumas as well, such as tumas sheretz or whatever. The point is, according to that opinion, it's not makabel tumas mess. It's not makabel tumas midras, because it's not meant for lying on. It's not meant for lying or standing or whatever on. Divrei Rav Dosa, v'chamamim midras. The Chum say that it's matami midras. So first of all, we have to figure out, midras ein tumim mesloi. Are you telling me that according to the Chachamim, a chaitzolos, whatever they are makabel tuma only tumas midras, not tumas mes? We have a general rule that we learn in the Mishnah. Anything that's makabel tumas midras is also makabel tumas mes. The Gemara actually learns it from a kabel choymer. So when we say, for example, in the Mishnah's shlosha trisin hain that are learned for the 11 months and for a yortzeit, we have, for example, shlosha trisin hain, shlosha golos hain, all those different kinds, and the first one in each category we always say metame midras. That means it is metame midras and also tmeimes. So what are the Chachamim saying over here that the Chaitzel is metame midras, implying only that? So you're right, Ema af midras. You're right. What the Chachamim mean is that it's also tumas midras. Rav Dosa is saying it's only tumas mes, and the Chachamim are saying midras as well as tumas mes. So now that we figured that out, now my Chaitzelos. What are Chaitzelos that we're talking about? Amar Rav Dimi bar Hamduri marzuvli. They are what are called in Aramaic marzuvli. Well, in a later time, they stopped using that word, marzuli. So, my marzuli. So, now, in a later time, we have to know what those are. Rav Abba, mizabli. So, Rav Abba says they are mizabli, which are bags that are used by a shepherd. So he carries his stuff in the bag, but he also sometimes uses it as a pillow. So Rav Dosa maybe would say that it's not matame midras because you only use it once in a while. The general rule is something is matame midras only if it's meant for lying or sleeping or standing or whatever on. The Gemara in Shabbos talks about a concept called amoid v'nasa malachtenu. That if you have something where you have something where a person could physically sit or lie on it, but if he does, and people are going to tell him, get up, we need it for our work, then that's not matami midras. So the possibility is over here either that this bag is meant for holding things and not for using as a pillow, and if a person uses it as a pillow, they're going to tell him, amoid v'nasa malachtenu. Or it could be actually the Chazon Ish explains you only use it once in a very great while, because it's hard, and it's hard to sleep on it. So therefore, according to Rav Dosa, it's not matami midras, whereas according to the Chachamim it is. The Rabbeinu Hananel describes mezabli somewhat differently. He describes they make very narrow panels of material, and then they stitch them together, and they make baskets and things out of them. So I guess the idea would be that they're ribbed. They have a lot of ridges in them. Therefore, maybe they're not so comfortable to sleep on, and therefore Rav Dosa would say, therefore it's not matam midrash, whereas the Chachamim would say it is. Okay, so that's one explanation of chutzlos. On the other hand, Reb Shimon ben Lakish omer machtsolos mamish. Reish Lakish says that chutzolos of the Mishnah means mats. The word, the usual word for a mat in the Mishnah is machtsolos. So here it's the word chutzolos, which is the same shorash. So in other words, therefore, so machtsolos, so they're regular machtsolos, so they're not even suitable for sleeping on because they're too small. Nevertheless, we're saying, for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain soon, that they're still makabel truma. Now, why should they be makabel truma? If you can't sleep on them, we're going to get to that soon. So, as the Reish Lakish l'tamei, so now Reish Lakish, when he says that these chutzolos are makabel truma, that he's going according to his own svara, where we see elsewhere that he explained that there's actually different kinds of chutzolos or machtsolos or mats for this purpose. It depends not only on the size, as we've said before, and not only on the material and on how they're made, whether they're braided or woven smooth or whatever. There's another factor to consider, which we haven't brought into yet. So Reish Lakish says, by way of introduction to what he's going to say, Hareini kaparas Reb Chiya uvanav. Let me be a kapara for Reb Chiya and his sons. So Reb Chiya, we know who he was. He was a great Talmud of Levi. His sons were, he had, the Gemara tells us in Yevamos that his wife had two twin boys and then two twin girls. The boys' names were Yehuda and Chizkiah. The girls' names were Pazi and Tavi. Anyway, the two boys, Yehuda and Chizkiah, were also very distinguished Talmid Chachamim. Yehuda, it seems, passed away young. We don't really know much about him. Chizkiah, later on, became the Rebbe of Rabbi Yechanan. We find in a number of places in Chas, Rabbi Yechanan quoting things in the name of Chizkiah and discussing things in halacha with him and sometimes arguing with him. Anyway, so Reish Lakish is using a respectful expression about Reb Chiya and his sons, that if any yisurim that should come on me should be for the kapara of Reb Chiya and his children. Now, usually you have, for example, a person is supposed to say after their parent passed away, during the 12 months after that, you say, Hareini kaparas nishkavoi. Here, it wasn't necessarily within 12 months of when Reb Chiya passed away, but still, Reish Lakish used the expression out of respect to them. Because he's going to explain how much they accomplished in reestablishing knowledge of Torah among the Jewish people. Shebetchila, Reish Lakish says, you should know, originally, at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, when Torah was being forgotten by the Jewish people, maybe not the whole Torah, but even the Ritva says, even the Rashba says, rather, even an individual detail of the Torah that's forgotten is a tremendous tragedy. So when that was happening, Ola Ezra mi Bavel b'Yistra. Ezra came up from Bavel at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash and reestablished it. Now there were many Chachamim, there was a whole Anshech Knesset Gedolah, but we're singling out Ezra. The Pasuk actually says on him that he Ezra Heichim Lebavoi, that he prepared himself and worked much harder than everybody else to reestablish and teach the Jewish people Torah, and therefore he's given the credit over here. Later on, during the time of the second Beis Mikdash, it was in danger of being forgotten again. Then Ola Hillel Ababli v'Yista. Then Hillel came from Babel and reestablished it. You have the story in Pesachim where they weren't sure about the Korban Pesach, whether it's brought on Shabbos or not, and the Bnei B'Seir called in Hillel, and he proved to them that it is. So that's an example of a detail in Torah that they were forgetting, and Hillel reestablished. Then Chazer v'Nishtakcha. Then in a later time, it was being forgotten again. All the Reb Chiya uvanav v'Yistua. Reb Chiya and his sons came from Bavel and reestablished knowledge of the Torah and clarified these unclear points in the Torah. So we see, in other words, that Reb Chiya belongs to a very distinguished lineage over there. That he's one of these ones in history, in Jewish history, who reestablished knowledge of Torah in Eretz Yisrael when there was danger of some of it being forgotten. Anyway, now that Reish Lakish says that introduction, he says, I want to tell you something that Reb Chiya and his sons said regarding this matter of mats. V'chein Amar Rav Chiya Banav. So Rish Lakish says, this is what Rav Chiya and his children, by the way, this is what we're saying about these different times when the Torah was being forgotten. So at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, we're talking about they had just come from Babel. Yeah, there were big problems with intermarriage. There were all kinds of problems like that. So Ezra worked to reestablish knowledge of the Torah among Eretz Yisrael. Among the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. In particular, that was the end of the time of Nevuah. That was the beginning. That was the end of the time of Tanakh. So therefore, that was like a watershed in Jewish history, which Ezra took care of. The next time with Hillel, we're talking about it was the time when Machloikas was beginning to proliferate. This is how the Aruch HaNer explains it. In Hillel's time, Machloikas was beginning to proliferate among the Chachamim. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that the Torah was almost becoming like two Torahs because there was so many Machloikas in between Bishama and Basilo. So Hillel came and was able to reestablish a solid knowledge of the Torah. And then in Rav Chiya's times, it was after the wars of the Churban and of Bar Kochba. Many Jews had been killed. The Chachamim was having to scatter in every direction. And now it was the end of the time of the Mishnah and the beginning of the time of the Gemara. So therefore, Rav Chiya was that figure now who came and reestablished that they should have a solid knowledge of the Mishnah in order to be able to transmit it to future generations. Anyway, so Rish Lakish says, V'chein Amar Rav Chiya Banav. This is what Rav Chiya and his son said regarding this matter of mats. Loi nechlaku Rav Dosa v'chachamim al machtzolah shal usha. Rav Dosa and the Chachamim, where again we said before that Rav Dosa said that chitzolos are only tamim mess, and the Chachamim had said they're also matamim midras. So they're not talking about machtzolos shal usha. They're not talking about the kind of mats that are made or used in Usha, which is a city in the Galil. It's one of the places where the Sanhedrin moved at in the years after the Churban. So there's no machlokas about that. Shehein tneis, those sure are makabel trumas midras because those are meant for laying on. On the other hand, there are the kind of mats that are made in Tveria, which are hard and nobody likes to sleep on them. Therefore, by default, they're made for other purposes such as schach. Alman nechlaku. So what is the machlokas from Gosan and the Chachamim? Al Shar Makomis, about mats made in other places. Marisava came into Lester de Yosef al Ayuk de Tveria down. So the Gosa holds in other places, nobody sits on them. Most people don't use them for sitting on. Therefore, they're like the ones of Tveria. They're not makabel. They're makabel trumas mess. Fine, because they're a keli, as we're going to say soon. But for reasons that we're going to say soon, but they're not makabel trumas midras. Where's the chachamim hold? Kibin mikri yasi alayu. Since once in a while it happens that people do sit on them, therefore kidu usha damian. Therefore they have the din like the ones from usha, and therefore the makabel trumas midras as well. So this is the point that Rish Lakish wants us to know, that Rav Chiya and his sons are telling us that chitzolos means machtzolos, means mats, and that you should realize that there's a difference between mats from different places and for different purposes. Okay. So now, Omamar, so now we said before, kol chitzolos mitamin tmei mes divir Rav Dosa, we said that Rav Dosa says, all chitzolos are mitamin tmei mes, and according to the definition that Rish Lakish just gave us, chitzolos are mats, machtzolos. So then, v'hatanya v'chein ha'yu Rav Dosa over kivarav. Didn't we learn on Amar Aleph? We said that Rav Shmuel but Rav Yossi had said that various kinds of mats can be used for schach, and Rav Dosa said the same thing. Now, for them to be used for schach, obviously they can't be makabel tumah. So therefore, that means that Rav Dosa holds that they're not subject to tumah at all. So what are you telling me that Rav Dosa says that they are subject to tumah? Fine, he says not tumas midras, he says tumas mes. That doesn't matter as far as schach though. Any way that it's makabel tumah makes it no good for schach. So what's the story? The answer is like kasha hod isle gdanfa hod lesle gdanfa. It depends. There's another factor. Does the mat have a rim around it? So therefore, if it has a rim, in other words, sometimes you have a mat that's just made flat, and it's made that you can lie on it, or sit on it, or you can use it for tzach, as the case may be. But sometimes instead it's made, when they weave it to begin with, they make it that it has a raised border around the edges. So now you're able to put fruit in and things inside it. Therefore, it's a keli. Therefore it's makabel. So trumas midras, maybe it's makabel, maybe not. Depends whether it's hard or soft, depends whether it's made in Usha or Tveria, depends on the various factors we mentioned before.
But if it has a rim, then at least it is a keli as far as tumah, as far as tumas mess and other kinds of tumah. If it has no rim at all, then it's not makabel tumah at all. So therefore, that's where Rav Dosa is saying that. Therefore, that's where Rav Dosa is saying, like Rav Shmuel, but Rav Yosi, that in that case, most kinds of mats would actually be kosher for tzchach if they don't have a rim. Okay. And by the way, what happens if the rim is broken off? So the Rambam points out, and this is brought lahalacha, doesn't matter, because it was already a keli that is makabel tumah, and now if the rim is broken off, then okay, it's still considered shivrei kelim, it's still like a broken piece of a keli. Just like you don't say, for example, that a wooden chair you can't use for schach, but then if the chair breaks, you're allowed to, because no, it was makabel tumah at one point, and that's that. The same thing would be over here. With that said, the Roga Chava wants to say in the Rambam that maybe the Rambam would agree if you broke it off, maybe that would be different, because then you did a maisa to make it that it's not makabel tumah anymore. Maybe then it would be effective. Maybe the Rambam's only talking about where it broke off on its own. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says Macy. Okay, I have a contradiction to this. So now we're now. Let's go back. We said on Amud Aleph we have two different opinions what chotzolos of the Mishnah are. We had Rav Abba telling us that they are mezabli. They are bags that are used by shepherds, and sometimes also they use them as a pillow. And Rish Lakish had brought in the name of Rav Chiya and his son that it means mats. So the Gemara says, Mesri, I have a contradiction on Rish Lakish's explanation. A Braisa says, Chotzolos shel sham, Chotzolos, which again, we have the two different definitions, what Chotzolos are, that are made out of sham, which is, Rashi defines it as a type of shifa. Shifa, we had on Amud Aleph, is some kind of soft grass or soft plant or something. So sham is a subspecies of that. In modern Hebrew, they use sham to mean cork, but that's not like what they use for wine bottles, but apparently that's not what it means in the Gemara. Anyway, so chetzolos that are made out of sham, v'shel gemi, or gemi, which is another kind of soft grass, v'shel sack, or that's made out of sackcloth, which is made out of goat hair, v'shel sfira, or which is made out of horse hair, it actually describes you trim the mane of the horse, so you trim the tail of the horse, and then you have hair that you can use to make a keli out of. So all of those kinds of chatzolos, mitame tmenes, all of them are makabel tumas mes, divrei Rav Dosa, v'chamim oimrim, whereas the chum say, ach midras, the chum say they're also makabel tumas midras. So now, let's figure that out. Bishleim lamanda omar zuvli. So I can understand according to Rav Abba who defined chotzolos as being bags. Then let's consider all these different materials. Shal sham, shal gemi. One's made out of sham or gemi. They have larger holes in them. Nevertheless, chozul akimsa de peri. You can still use them as a container for peris. So therefore, it can be considered a keli. Shall sack, shall sphira, and if they're made out of goat hair or out of horse hair, where therefore it's fairly tightly woven, chozulagulki vitsani, then you're able to use them for bags and for baskets to be able to hold anything, even smaller fruit in. So according to that opinion, we understand why all four of those materials, the bag made out of them is the kabel tumas mess, because all four of them are functional kelim. There are ones that are more tightly woven, there are ones that are more loosely woven, but even the more loosely woven ones, the ones made out of sham or gemi, are still useful for holding large fruit. But according to Rish Lakish, that chotzolos means machzolos. Well, the shlema shall sack the shall sphira. So if they're made out of goat hair or out of horse hair, sure, I can understand what you'd use them for. Chozul parsi v'naf vasa. According to him, a flat mat that's made out of horse hair or out of goat hair, you could use it as a curtain to hang in front of a door. You could also use it as a sieve to sift flour. And by the way, why would a curtain hanging in front of the door, why would that make it be makabel tumah? Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Beitza that says that a curtain hanging by a door is makabel tumah because sometimes a waiter or a house servant or whatever wraps himself in it to keep himself warm. So therefore, in that sense, it's considered a keli. It's considered like an item of clothing. So according to Rish Lakish, a mat made out of sack or sphira, sure, you can use it for those purposes. You can use it to sift. You can use it to hang as a curtain in front of a door. But if you're talking about a flat mat that's made out of sham or gemi, those are soft grasses. So if it's flat and it's small and it's not made for lying on, so then you can't put peiros or kalim inside it either, because the holes, on the face of it, the holes are not the holes, it's flat. It doesn't have a kli kibble, it doesn't have a receptacle. So why would it be makabel tumah according to Rish Lakish? The answer is, chozu l'naz yosa, you can use it. You could use them to cover a barrel that's used for making beer. So therefore, it is considered a functional keli in that sense that you can use it to cover such a thing. Tosfos actually has a problem with that explanation, because so what if you use it to cover a barrel. Still, a barrel cover, wouldn't a barrel cover in and of itself wouldn't be makabel tumah. So Tosfos says, okay, evidently it's used not just as a cover, it's used to hold something as well. All right. Ikadamri, another version of, so according to the Rish Lakish, we can also understand. So again, according to the Abba's definition, that chitzolos are bags, then when they're made out of any material, whether they're coarsely woven or tightly woven, then you're able to put things inside those bags, therefore they're makabel tumah. According to the Rish Lakish, that we're talking about mats, then the finely woven ones can be used as door curtains or as sieves, and the more coarsely woven ones can be used to cover a barrel where you're brewing beer. Ikadami, another version of the discussion goes the other way around. The Shleim Lamanda Amma Machzolis Mamish. The other version is the other way around. We start with, if it means mat, then it's easy to understand why all four of those are useful. Because, Shosham or Shogemi Chozul and Azyasa, as we just said, the ones made out of Sham or Gemi, which are very coarsely and loosely woven, those you could use as a cover for a vat where you're making beer. Shosach or Shosfira Chozul, the Paris even Atvasa. If they're made out of goat hair or horse hair, you could use them to put as a curtain in front of the door, or you could use them to sift flour. So according to that, we understand. Elamanda Amamar Zubli, but according to Abba, who said that they are bags that are used by shepherds, the Shlema Shal Sakha Shal Spira Chazal Gurki Vitsani. So if they're made out of finer material, goat hair or horse hair, then you could use them for bags and baskets to hold anything, because they're tightly woven and it won't fall out. But in the first version, the Gemara assumed right away we know what you could use them for. In the second version, the Gemara doesn't know. Maybe these came, I guess these different versions came from different yeshivas. Maybe in different places, they didn't regularly use coarsely woven baskets like that, and therefore the Gemara doesn't know, according to the second version, what you would use a coarsely woven basket with largish holes in it, what you would use them for. So the maichazu, what would you use them for? And the answer is chazu akin to the peri. You could use them as a basket for large food. Okay, so same thing. We end up in the same place as the first one. But which one did we assume we know? Which one did we know right away? Versus which one did we have to ask and get an answer? Okay. To finish off, to round out this discussion about using mats for schach, Tanya, we learn in a brisa, Omer of Chananya. When I went down to the Goyla, which is Babel, specifically Nahardar or Pompadissa in Babel, and Rashi describes he went there in order to declare an Ibrugar. Now the Gemara in Brachas has a whole story where this same Rabbi Hananiah, there it calls him Hananiah, the nephew of Rabbi Yeshua, but here we're going to see also that he was the nephew of Rabbi Yeshua. So he had been in Babel, he had been doing Kiddush HaChodesh and Ibur Shana over there, and the Gemara in Brachos describes how the Chachamim sent messengers to tell him to stop it, because now there were great Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, and they had a whole discussion back and forth about it, and eventually Hananiah accepted their opinion. So over here we're saying, so Rashi says, this is the beginning of that same story, when he went there to be Ma'abur Shanim. Although there are some Achronim who say maybe not, historically, we see in the Gemara over there in Brachos that he's saying there was nobody of my caliber left in Eretz Yisrael when I left, therefore I was allowed to do that. Whereas here, we're going to say that he came back and discussed it with his uncle Rabbi Yeshua, who obviously is at least as great as he is. So therefore, it may have been two different times. Whatever the case, we do know that at various times the Romans interfered with the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael and made it hard for them to gather together for Kiddush HaChodesh or Ibur Shana. So there were various times when the Chachamim had to go to Babel or to other places outside Eretz Yisrael to be able to do it. So this would be one of those examples. So he went to the Goyla to do that. Motsasi Zokin Echad, I found there an elder Talmud Chacham, the Omerli, and he said to me, Misachin b'budya, you should know that you're allowed to use a budya for schach. A budya is a mat. Specifically, Tosfos says this is the kind of mat that's used usually for putting dates on it to dry. If it has a rim around it, if it has a rim around it, like we said before, then it's used to put dates on to dry, because then the rim will keep the dates from sliding off. Therefore, it's makabel truma. But here we're talking about where it's that kind of mat, but it doesn't have a rim. So therefore, you're allowed to use it. Uchshabasi etzer of Yeshua achi Abba. So Rabbi Chananya says, when I came to my uncle Rabbi Yeshua and told him that hodul dvarav, he agreed with what this elder Talmud Chacham said, that that's correct. You can use a budya for schach. Amar Rabbi Chista hodul es legnanfer. So Rabbi Chista clarifies again. Yeah, that means only if it doesn't have a rim around it. And the Gemara says, Amar Ula hani budyasa dibnei mechuzah. For that matter, also, the mats that people use in Mechuzah, il molei kir shalahen, if it weren't for the fact that they have a rim around them, masachin b'hu, then you would have been able to use them for schach. They have a rim, therefore they're not. They're makabel truma, but if not, then otherwise they would have fit all the criteria of a mat that you could use for schach. Tani nami hochi, we learn similarly in a braisa, masachin b'budya, you are allowed to use a budya, which is a type of mat, but if they have a wall, if they have a rim raised up from the surface all around, then in the sach can behen, then you cannot use them for schach, because then they're a klikid. Hadran aloch sukkah. The next parak over here, Hayoshin, is also, we're continuing with the dinim of a sukkah, but mostly we're going to be dealing a little bit more with the construction of a sukkah, but mostly the focus in the parak is going to be more on the mitzvah of being in the sukkah. We know you have a mitzvah of teishku kein jaduru, you have to live in the sukkah during sukkahs like you live in your house throughout the rest of the year. So the main focus in our parak is going to be the dinim of how to use the sukkah, how you eat and how you sleep in it, and so forth. And then in the course of, we'll get to later on in the perek, when we get to the dinim about sleeping in the sukkah, and shenas keva, and shenas arai, and whatever, then we'll talk best to Shem why it is that our minhag is not to sleep in the sukkah, and how that fits with what the Gemara is saying that you're supposed to. Okay, so the Mishnah starts off. Hayoshen tachas amita basukkah, if a person sleeps underneath a bed in the sukkah, lo yotze yidei chevasai, then he's not yotze the mitzvah of sukkah. The Gemara is going to explain that we're talking about a bed which is at least 10 tefachim tall. So therefore, what comes out is you're sleeping under another oihel in the sukkah. In fact, there's a discussion among the Rishonim among it in connection with the opinion of the Rif and so on and so forth, whether the problem is that you have, does it have to do with the problem that we learned in the first perek of sukkah shetachas sukkah? We learned over there that if you have a double decker sukkah, then it's possible because the Torah is telling you should be only under one schach and not two. So is the problem now that it affects you under two schachs? Or is it that the problem is that you have an oihel of its own inside the sukkah? Whatever the case, the point is therefore you're not yotze the mitzvah of sleeping in the sukkah. Amr Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Yehuda says no. Noyagin hayinu shor yishenim tachas amitzah b'fnei haskenim. We used to sleep under a bed in front of the skenim in the sukkah, b'loy amru lanu davar, and they never said anything to us. So you see that there's no problem sleeping under a bed in the sukkah. We've learned previously in the previous perek that Rabbi Yehuda holds that sukkah has to be diras keva, or can be, or has to be, diras keva, a more permanent dwelling, as opposed to the Tanakam, as opposed to the Chachamim, who would say that diras arai, a temporary dwelling. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda holds that the sleeping under a bed is not really a diras keva, therefore it's not mevatel the sukkah. Therefore you're still fine sleeping underneath it. Amar Rav Shimon, but Rav Shimon says, on the other hand, let me bring a proof for what the Tanakhama is saying, that you're not allowed to sleep under the sukkah, not like Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Maisa, the Tovi, Abdeh Shirem Gamil, it happened once with Tovi, the slave, he was an Eved Knani, of Rabban Gamliel. Now, Avodim Knanim are potter from Sukkah, because Sukkah is a mitzvah esesh as man grama. Women are potter from it, and the general rule is any mitzvah that women are potter from, any mitzvah I say that women are potter from, then Avodim Knanim are also potter from. So Tobi is potter from the Sukkah, and Shahoyah Yoshin Tachas HaMitzah, he was sleeping underneath the bed. Tosfos explains, on the one hand, he wanted to be inside the Sukkah in order to hear what the Chachamim are saying, because as the Gemara is going to go on to say, as the Mishnah is going to go on to say, Tobi was a Talmid Chacham. So he wanted to hear what the Chachamim are saying in the Sukkah, but he didn't want to take up room that other people could use that have to sleep in the Sukkah, therefore he slept under the bed. But Amalahan Rabban Gamliel is Skanim, so Rabban Gamliel says to the other Chachamim over there, Re'isam Tobi Abdi, have you seen my servant Tobi? Look how smart he is. Shahu Tamad Chacham, he is a Tamad Chacham, the Adeya Sha'avodim Turim in Asukkah, he knows that slaves are potter from sleeping in the Sukkah, Lefichach Yoshan Utachas Amitah, therefore he's sleeping under the bed. So again, from the Yerushalmi, it's actually not Tosfos' own thing, they bring from the Yerushalmi, that again, he didn't want to take up room that other people could use, therefore he slept under the bed, but he still wanted to be in the Sukkah to hear what the Chachamim was saying. So Rabban Gamliel is complimenting him that look, he's smart and realizes that he's sleeping under the bed, therefore he's not taking up space that somebody else could have used to sleep in the sofa. Ulafidar Kainu Lamadnu. So based on Rabban Gamliel is not saying that to teach us a halacha. This is an example of Sichas Cholin Shatamad Chachamim, where Tamad Chacham is saying something casually, but nevertheless we learn something from it, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. So Ulafidar Kainu, by the way, from what Rabban Gamliel is saying, we learn that if you sleep under a bed, you're not yotze, not like you, Rabbi Yehuda, are saying. Okay. So the Gemara asks, why are you not yotze if you sleep under a bed? The bed is not 10 tefachim tall, so it's not considered an oihel. Now, again, Tosfos points out, we did have in the previous perek, when we talk about sukkah tachas sukkah, we had a few different opinions of Amiroyim, how tall the top sukkah has to be a problem. Is it 10 tefachim? Was it 4 tefachim? Was it 1 tefach? But when we're talking about a bed, then a bed is definitely oil arai as opposed to a sukkah built on top of a sukkah, which has more of a permanence to it. Therefore, everybody's going to agree that if it's less than 10 tefachim tall, there's no problem. So again, the question is, if it's less than 10, what's the problem? The answer is Tugum or Shmuel, the Sukkah Asar, this Bimita Asara. That's exactly that. Shmuel explained that we're talking about a bed 10 tefachim tall. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to start on another topic in connection with the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara, in connection with the halachas of what is an oihel for purposes of Tumah V'Tahara. We're going to have the opinion of the Chachamim and the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Based on that, we're going to define what is considered an oihel according to Rabbi Yehuda. And then eventually we're going to relate that back to our Mishnah and see why it is that Rabbi Yehuda allows you to sleep under a bed 10 tefachim tall in the Sukkah. So the question is, Tanan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Oholos. Now you have like this. We know that we've learned previously that an oihel tefach has consequences as far as tumah. An oihel tefach is mevius a tumah. It transmits tumah to anything else that is under the same oihel. And it's also choitzitz b'fnei tumah. It also blocks the tumah from going upward or downward, above or below the oihel. And the oihel, for that purpose, has to be a tefach by a tefach by a tefach. So a Mishnah says in Oholos, echad chur, whether we're talking about a hole that was made by water, so water is trickling underground and eventually made a hole in the ground, like you have about the story of Rabbi Akiva and the rock, for example. So such a hole, if it's a tefach by a tefach by a tefach, oishrotzim, or that creeping creatures, for example, weasels or mice or whatever, dug tunnels underground, oishachalatu malachas, or that salty ground got consumed, like you have, for example, Rashi described, you have sometimes when the ground is salty and dry, then it cracks open. So suppose you have such a crack, which is a tefach by a tefach in size. V'chein midbach avonim. The same thing if you have a row of stones that are, you know, a row of stones or bricks that are laid out. Many times you have, sometimes you have, you have these, this row of them laid out, let's say to prepare for building, and you may have a space between them. It may so happen that you laid them out in such a way that there's a space between one brick or between one stone and the next of a tefach by a tefach by a tefach. The usual word for that, by the way, is nidbach. Here it's midbach with a mem. The Tosfos Yom Tov actually says that it's a compound word. The word murbios means large, and nidbach means a row of stones, so it means a row of large stones. Anyway, v'chein savor shokoros, the same thing, a pile of beams, same idea, you have beams stacked one on top of another on the ground to be ready for a building project, and sometimes you may have that they're not stacked exactly flush one with another, and you have a space between one and the next, so all of those things, ma'a ilala truma, all of those are considered an oihel regarding truma. So if let's say you have a kezias of a mess, let's say for example the first example that we have where water carved out a tunnel underground, let's say you have a kezias of a mess inside that hole in the ground. So anything else inside that hole is going to be mekabel truma, but anything outside it, even if it's directly above the hole, is not. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer kol oihel sheino asi bidei adam eino oihel. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says no. Any oihel that was not made by human hands is not an oihel. So all these examples that we gave, Rabbi Yehuda would say those are not considered an oihel as far as truma. So therefore, the rule would be that nothing else that's next to the mess inside the hole is going to be mekabel truma. On the other hand, anything directly above it or below it is going to be mekabel truma. Is going to become tamei according to Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rabbi Yehuda distinguish between an oihel made by people or not? The answer is, yalich oihel oihel mimishkan. Because he learns on Xeda Shabbat from the word oihel from the Mishkan. Ksiv hacha zoysa toira odom kiyomus ba'oihel. You have where it says that a person died in an oihel, and that's where we learn the whole concept of Tumas oihel is from that passage. By the Mishkan, it says that Moshe spread out the oihel on the Mishkan. Therefore, malahal midei adam, afkan midei adam. There it was done by human agency. Moshe spread it out. The same thing for an oihel to be considered. An oihel for tumah also has to have been made by a person. V'rabbanon, what are the Rabbanon answer to that? They say, fine, but oihel, oihel riba. That's true. But on the other hand, the fact is, in the parasha, in Parashas Korah, when it talks about the dinim of Tumas Nes, and when it talks about the dinim of Tumas Oihel, it says many times in the Pesukim over there the word Oihel, and that is a ribui, so it adds any other kind of oil as well. So what do they do with the Gzeira Shava? The Ritva explains that a Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos tells us that they learn from that what we mentioned before, what Tosfos said, that only an oihel made out of linen is itself Mekabel Tuma. They learn that from the Mishkan, where the oihel of the Mishkan was made out of a couple of different materials, including linen. So therefore, we learn from that that anything that's what it is. Not that linen is the only material, but linen is the only material that grows from the ground. That is Mekabel Tumah as an oihel. So wool, but wool as well. The curtains of the Mishkan were made out of wool and linen and goat hair and so forth. So they're learning that from the Gzeira Shava, so they're not using the word oihel to teach us that it has to be made by a person. They're saying the fact that it says oihel so many times means any kind of oihel, whether it's made by a person or by water or by mice or whatever, is still considered an oihel. Okay. So the Gemara asks, the Savar of Yehuda, kol oihel sheino osi bidei adam eino oihel? So are you telling me that Rabbi Yehuda holds that any oihel not made by human hands is not an oihel? Or a minu, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah tells us in the Masechta Parah. Now, when it came to the Parah Adumah, they always tried to make sure, we learned this in Yuma as well, that they had the highest possible standards of Tara for the Kohen Gadol who's going to prepare the Parah Adumah, and for the water that's used for the Parah Adumah. The reason for that is, we learned in the beginning of Yuma, that midaraisa, the halacha is that a person can be a tzvul yoim and still be preparing the parah adumah. The tzedukim in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash claim that it's not so. A person has to be completely tahor. Therefore, the chachamim davka said that the kohen gadol has to be a tzvul yoim when he does the parah adumah. And then, because we don't want people to start getting careless and thinking if he can be a tzvul yoim, then there's no problem with other kinds of tumah as well. Therefore, the chachamim imposed many, 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 many detailed rules of tahara on the kohen gadol. So one of them was, we want like this. During the 7 days that the Kohen Gadol is preparing to do the Parah Adumah, he needs to be sprinkled every day with Parah Adumah water. We want that the one who's sprinkling him himself is going to be somebody who is completely tahor, where there's no possibility that he himself was tameh. Where are you going to find a person who would never became tameh? So, chatzeres hayabnuyas v'yishalayim agabe asela. There were courtyards built in the Beis Mikdash directly on the bedrock. There were empty spaces underneath them. There were vaults underneath them because of, just in case of the possibility that there might be an underground caver. So they built vaults on top of vaults in such a way that the pillars that held up one level are underneath the spaces of the other level and vice versa. And that way, even if there's tumah underground, it'll be blocked by one or the other level of oil over there. Anyway, so umavian noshim ubris for yodis shum, they would bring women who were pregnant and they would give birth over there. Umagadlas pneum shum lapara, they would raise their children over there. That eventually, when the children are old enough, when they're 7 or 8 years old, so they're not old enough to even have tumas keri, then therefore they would be the ones who would help prepare the next parah adumah. Umavian shvarim. Now, they would bring oxen when it came time to take these boys out of the schotzer and have them fill up water for the parah adumah. They would bring oxen for the boys to ride on. On the backs of the oxen were doors. The children would sit on the backs, on the doors, on the backs of the oxen. And they had in their hands, they had stone cups in their hands, because stone is not makabel truma. He gil the shiloyach. Once they reached the shiloyach spring, yodu l'seichamayim, then they would go down into the water, umilum, and they would fill up the cups with water, because you need spring water for the parah adumah, but all over yoshpalahem, and then they would go sit back on the doors and ride towards the Beis Mikdash. The point is that the Tanakama over here holds, they didn't need to actually go, they could actually get off the oxen in order to fill up the water. They didn't have to lower down the cups using chains or whatever. The Rambam explains the reason is because people don't usually bury mesim in springs. So therefore there's no reason to assume by the Shiloyach spring that there would be a mess underneath it. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that no, they would sit where they were on the doors, on the oxen, and they would lower down the cups using strings or chains or whatever, and fill it up just in case of Kevrat HaHoyim, just in case there might be an underground cave over there also. And Batanya, and we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer lo hayu mevin delosos ela shvarim. Now Rabbi Yehuda says they didn't have doors, they just had oxen. The boys would just sit on the oxen. Now, oxen that had very wide backs, the Mishnah explains over there, the Braisa explains, but still, he said, now, oxen are not made bidei Adam, and still Rabbi Yehuda is saying that those are good enough for an oil. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda says that even an oil not made by human hands is still fine for an oil, and it prevents the tumor from getting to the boys. So the answer is ki osir of dimi omer of Elazar murder Rabbi Yehuda kim loy egrav. Rabbi Yehuda would agree when you have the size of a large fist in the oihel, which we're talking about the fist of a person named Ben Batiach, which was the size of the average person's head. When you have a space that large, even Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree that it's an oihel, even if it wasn't made by human hands. So the space from the ground until the bottom of the ox's stomach is more than an egg roof, is more than the size of an average human head. Therefore, the Yehuda will consider it an oil. Tanya nami hachi umoyder Yehuda b'shtifinu and a kick ass loyim. We learn similarly in a braisa that Yehuda does agree when it comes to when you have rocks fall down from a cliff or something and you have a big hole left over there or large clefts between rocks. He agrees that those count as an oil. So you see that there are natural cavities that he considers oilim, but they have to be much larger than a tefach. One time they have to be meloy egrim. So we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, discussing this point from Para about this, about how they had these boys riding to do the Parah Adumah, and then we'll get back to how that relates to the oil of a sukkah.